Hi, my name is Dave Mapolik. My sobriety date is March 9, 2010. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and thank you. By the grace of a higher power, I am able to sponsor today. I hail from the faraway land of Staten Island. Yes, you know, for those of you who don't know, yes, we're actually part of New York City. We're not the dump anymore. You know, just people find a kick that, you know, I'm from out there. But, you know, experience, strength, and hope. Well, first of all, I'd like to say it is a privilege to be here and to be able to speak. But so you know, my story is mine and mine alone. My experiences are what I have gone through in this program. Yours may vary greatly and differently. Doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. Doesn't mean that you're not doing it to the best of your ability. This is just what I did. So to start, yes, I drank. I drank for a while. I drank because I thought I didn't fit in otherwise. Now, I'm a diabetic. I was diagnosed at 17, and coincidentally, that's when I started drinking. And I can still remember my first drink. For those of you who know Staten Island, it was in Willowbrook Park, and it was a 40 of Crazy Horse. It tasted like shit, but I remember sitting there and drinking. I'm like, this is horrible. Who would want to drink this thing? I want my soda. But instead, I'm looking around, and I'm seeing, well, everybody else is like starting to get loosey and goosey, and like they're talking, this conversation. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is what I have to do to fit in. And I never liked to drink. And when I first came into this program, I believed that because of that, well, I'm not really an alcoholic. My issues are beyond the scope of what AA can offer me. However, come to find out, yeah, I didn't like to drink. I didn't like alcohol, beer, whatever, and yet I would still find myself doing it. I would still find myself in those places where I'd wake up and just be, what the hell happened? What did I do last night? You know, look at my phone, or who did I piss off? Who can't I talk to today? Who did I rob from? Who did I screw over? You know, who do I have to apologize for? Because that was the one thing I was really good at. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everyone. My parents, I'm sorry, Mom, I called you on Mother's Day to come bail me out of Rikers. You know, my friends, I'm sorry I hooked up with your girlfriend. I thought she wasn't. You were on a break. You know, like it was a million I'm sorries. And I can tell you truthfully, at the time I said it, I probably meant it. I was probably sincerely, you know, sorry for what I had done. Until I needed to get what I needed, and then whatever, you know, you're just a tool to me. Whatever you can give me, I'm going to take, and then if you can't do anything for me, get the F out of my way. You know, so that lasted for approximately 15 years, where I assumed, like, that's just my life. That's all I'm capable of. I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict, I'm a loser, I'm a thief, I'm a liar, I'm a lowlife, and that's what I was. I tried to own it, because I couldn't fathom any other way of living. I thought that was it for me. You know, long story short, I had legal issues, which, you know, forced me into, quote-unquote, early recovery. Early recovery basically meant I had to go to the drunk driving program, watch a bunch of videos, which included Requiem for a Dream, which I thought was awesome. I'm like, cool, I get to watch this. And we did that for 6 weeks, and then, you know, I was like, oh, okay, cool, I graduated with all these other guys. I'm going to get my license back, and I'll go back to my life. And I sit down with the head guy, and he's like, yeah, based on what we've seen, I think you have a problem. I was like, me? I don't have a problem. The cop had the problem. The judge had the problem. The CO had the problem. My friends have the problem. My family had, you know, but I don't have. I'm great. What are you talking about? You know, like, well, you have a problem. And if you want to get your license back, if you want to continue in recovery, then you're going to have to go to an outpatient. So in my mind, I'm like, all right, what does that mean? Go sit with like a shrink for one day a week, and I'll BS my way through that. Fine. Little did I know. It was IOP. I didn't know what I stood for at the time. It stood for intensive. Now I like to think it stood for insanity or inane, but that's just me. So I went. And so I'm going, I'm sitting there, and I was told it would be a three-month program. I'm like, I can do this for 3 months. They tricked me, obviously. You know, I was there for over a year. But the whole time I'm there, I'm just going, all right, I just got to BS, lie, talk in these groups and say all the right things. You know, drinking's bad. Drugs are bad. Bad, bad, bad. I can do it again. You know, and they'll leave me alone. So I'm doing that. I'm doing that. And slowly but surely, I'm starting to listen to other people who are in this program. I'm like, wow, their lives suck. Wow, you know, they've had some horrible experiences. I can understand why they are the way they are, but, you know, I'm cool. I'm like, I'm just chilling. I'm hanging out. I'm not dirting anybody. So, the funny thing is, I was talking to my sponsor about this last week, how we're told, like, sometimes our greatest defects can actually become our greatest assets when it comes to helping ourselves and or others. And how I got into these rooms was, there was obviously a pretty girl at my outpatient who, under her guise, was like, oh, I'll, you know, go to 12-step. I'm going to put my hand down and help this person. In my mind, I'm like, yeah, she wants me. So she decides to invite me out on a Sunday to go to a diner with her friends. And when nobody else showed up, I was like, oh, nice cover. Your friends didn't come. It's just me and you. And she was like, oh, we'll go meet them. I was like, well, where are they? They're like, oh, they're at this church basement. I'm like, that's a freaking weird place to hang out. Whatever, you know, I'll go check it out. And she took me to my first meeting. And I remember I didn't make it into the meeting this time. I'm sitting outside, and I'm watching these group of people pour out of this basement. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? You know, and she's like, well, this is an AA meeting. I'm like, Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm like, I don't belong here. What's going on? But she was very pretty, so I'm like, I'll check it out, you know, whatever. And that's how my journey began. And I'll be honest, for the first 3 months in this program, all I did was follow her around. I'd call her every day. Well, what meeting are you going to? Oh, I'll meet you there. And instead of listening to any message, I'm sitting in the back making googly eyes at her, trying to figure out how can I manipulate her to liking me more. But somehow in that process, I don't know how, but somehow sitting in those seats, something started permeating this freaking big head of mine. Something started to tell me, like, wait a minute, now these are people, this is not your outpatient anymore. These are just people from all walks of life. You know, young, old, men, women, black, white, from homeless people to heads of big corporations. And yet they all have a similar issue. You know, and they all believe that they had a problem. And I, at some point, I stopped trying to compare myself to them. Like, oh, I'm better, I always used to think I'm better, but I'm worse. Because my mind would tell me I'm the biggest piece of shit in the room, but I'm still better than you. But I'm still the biggest piece of shit in the room, but I'm still better than you. You know? And after a while, like, that started to fade away. And it became like, no, wait. You guys actually have somewhat of a solution? You guys actually have a way to live that's not the way I've been living, and yet you seem happy. And you're telling me that you're not taking anything. You're telling me that you guys are completely sober. While my mind, being what it is, goes, all right, oh, wait a minute, what's in that coffee pot? How come I never get here early enough to see what they put in it? They're spiking it. That's why everybody's so happy. That's why everybody congregates around the coffee and everybody's hanging out and smoking cigarettes and laughing, having a great time, because they're still getting effed up. You know, obviously, okay, I figured this out. This is such a BS cult thing that it's not going to work. And I used to spout this at meetings, you know, and thankfully the people at the meetings I went to were, you know, kind enough to laugh at me and just tell me to keep coming back in the beginning. Eventually, I caught the ear of this one guy, and I had one of my rants. You know, I put my hand up, yeah, I'm Dave, I'm not wrong, whatever, you guys, blah, blah, blah. He comes to me after the meeting, and he's like, you know, you're really funny. He's like, I see what you're saying. It kind of makes sense to me. And I was like, oh, finally, a guy who's willing to admit that this is not real. So I'm like, you're cool, you know. He's like, well, here, take my number down, you know, why don't you call me next week and maybe we'll talk some more. And I'm like, whatever, alright, you know, this is the only guy here who's willing to admit that this is all fraud. So obviously I call him, and then first thing he says, he's like, well, you know, there's something we have, it's called the basic text, it's that blue book you always see around, you know, at these meetings, it's called, it says Alcoholics Anonymous on it. He's like, why don't you pick one up and read it? And me being me, okay, I'm going to prove you wrong. So I'm going to read this. I'm going to find all the stuff in here that's BS. I'm going to throw it in your face and tell you what, you know, liars you are. So I take it home and I read it. And I'm reading it. I'm like, wait, this is written in 1935. Some of this language doesn't make sense. What a freaking stockbroker. He's going across. What the Great Depression? Jesus, what is this? You know? I'm like, I failed history. Why am I doing this again? So I call him the next week and I'm like, dude. It's like, this book, it's so full of holes, and it doesn't make sense, and all this, you know, feeling good stuff, and, oh, we are on problem, man, you know, all crybaby crap. And he just, once again, this man just laughs at me. He's like, dude, that's awesome, you read it. And he's like, well, how about you come over on Wednesdays at 8 o'clock, and I'll sit and we'll read it together. And I'm like, dude, I just read this book. He's like, why do I got to read it with you? He was like, eh, maybe I can give you a little insight into some of these things. Or, and this is the way he got me, maybe you can give me a little insight into some. Maybe there's things I'm not saying. I'm like, oh, cool, I get to show you. A man with 20-plus years of sobriety who's actively worked this program, I get to show you what you're doing wrong with your life. You know, and that's how my journey started. And I remember going to read the book, and all of a sudden, hearing him read these same passages that I had read to myself, they took on a completely different meaning now. Because now I started identifying, not with his situation, not with Bill, you know, standing in front of the Winchester Cathedral, or, you know, throwing himself out of the window, even though I do identify with that, that the feelings he felt, the hopelessness, the helplessness, the feeling alone, despite the fact that there would not be anything going on in his day, that he could just ruin it somehow because he figured he needed to drink, that it wasn't an option. And I started understanding that. Because for the majority of my time, especially at the end, I wasn't getting up and going to drink or do anything because, oh, I want to feel good, I wanted to party and hang out. That's how it started for me, and that's what I chased. But at the end, it became, this is the only way I can face the world. It was like, without being inebriated or putting something into me, I can't even go to McDonald's and order food. Like, I would stutter, I would stare at the cashier, I had no clue what to do unless I was shit-faced. You know, and it became from getting drunk and feeling good to just trying to get right. And that became every single day. And I can tell you, at those nights, I would lay in bed and I would pray to the God that I didn't believe in, because, you know, what does God want to do with me? You know, I'm a screw up. He hasn't given me anything. To please end my life. To please just not let me wake up tomorrow. It would be so much easier for me, for my family, my friends, trying to have to deal with the craziness that is me. And yet every morning I would wake up and I'd feel like shit. So, all right, I guess I got to go do what I got to do. You know, and it wasn't until coming in these rooms and sitting down with that man, my first sponsor, that I was actually shown that there is a way, that there is something that can be done, that if I reach out for help, that help will be provided, provided I'm willing to reach out for it, to put in that work, you know. And when I heard the word work, I instantly became like, oh, come on, man. This isn't just I sit here and I think pleasant thoughts and I, you know, meditate and hum and ring some bells and all of a sudden everything's right. You know, it was like, no. He's like, this is work, the work that you have to do to save your own life. He's like, the work that you have to do to reach that power greater than yourself, which will help you in every aspect of your life. Because in the beginning, when I first started to come around to this program and start believing, I thought, well, okay, if I do everything here, if I go through the 12 steps, I'll wake up, I'll get a gold star on my thing, there'll be a great celebration, everybody will love me, and then my life will be complete 180, or it's beautiful, I'm going to have a supermodel girlfriend, the six-figure job, the beautiful mansion, all this stuff, you know. And I've come to know now, 5-plus years in, I'm still learning now, that no, that me, by getting sober, by making a beginning in this program, it's giving me the opportunity to have that life. But it's not going to be handed to me, you know. Because I was always told by all my sponsors, and I've had, at this point, I've had about 7. Because, you know, I get too smart for some of them. Oh, I know what to do. Oh, I've done, you know, tradition studies, and I've spoken at huge meetings in front of hundreds of people, and I'm this and that, and you haven't done none of that. You know, my ego all of a sudden comes in, kicks my ass, and knocks me out of this program. But when I'm able to be centered, it has shown me that if this is anything worth doing, it's worth doing right, because the payout is going to be something immeasurable. They say happy, joyous, and free. Like, that's what we come in for. And I always argue, happy and joyous, I watch a Giant game Sunday night, not so happy and joyous after that. You know, but the one thing that I've been promised here from the beginning, and I know is true only if I do what I'm directed to do by my higher power, is that freedom. That freedom from the bondage of insanity in my mind that told me lie upon lie, built my world on that lies, and then made me go out into it. So that every single time that the truth was shown to me, I'd react. Most of the times violently, angrily, you know, get depressed, get sad, yell, scream, cry, whatever. Because all of a sudden my illusion is shattered and my delusion is shattered. So I started going through the work with this man. slowly but surely, I started to see these things about myself, about what I had been up to this point in my life, about the lies. I actually started to see the BS that I always had built up for myself. And I remember, like, my fourth step, you know, that funny thing, that last column, because the first three are really easy. Okay, what you did, how it affected me, what pissed me off, blah, blah, blah. But that fourth column, what part did I have to play? Now, up to this point, I'm the victim, man. You know, my life hasn't been fair. My family hasn't been fair to me. You know, circumstances have always conspired against me and caused me to fail at everything. You know, the world was out to get me. The bus didn't come on time. My car broke down. The girl said no. Whatever the situation, it's everybody else's fault. I'm the victim. And that fourth column finally forced me to see, like, no, 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 dude. You're an active participant in this, man. You're not just standing on the sidelines. You got hit by a straight bullet. You know, you were running around out there, causing these fires, causing these confrontations, and then running away because you didn't want to deal with the consequences, and yet they would come and bite you in the ass. And it forced me to take a look at some of my behaviors and some of my thinking. And that was the biggest thing here. It was for my thinking, the way I thought about you, the way I thought about myself, the world I live in, you know, my daily existence, all of that. That's what was the biggest roadblock for me to actually coming to believing that there is something other. But thankfully, I got through that. I did my fifth step with this man. He laughed at basically 90% of the things I did, because in my mind, this is the most horrible thing. Oh my God, you're going to damn me to hell. And he would come back with a story that, in my mind, was 10 times worse. And yet he was able to laugh about it. And he would tell me about the people he hurt and the things he did, and yet then tell me later on in my eighth and ninth step about making the amends and going up to these people face to face and admitting what he did and standing there and taking whatever they dished out. You know, because I thought eighth and ninth step, oh, sorry. You know, I can say sorry to anyone. I make phone calls, send a text, email, you know. If I want to make you feel special, I'll write you a little letter and snail mail it. Mm. But no, he was like, dude, no. He's like, this is where you stand up and take responsibility for your actions. That word, responsibility, that's something that was foreign to me. Even as a 33-year-old guy who's, you know, quote-unquote an adult, responsibility is completely a foreign thing to me. And yet he showed me how to do that. He showed me how to stand up and be accountable and showed me what an amends is. You know, amends is not an apology. An amends is amending the behavior which caused the situation in the first place. It's trying to change the way I acted and what I did so that in the future these things would not happen again. That doesn't mean to say that I do this perfectly. I make one amends. You know, I make amends to my mom. Like, mom, you know, I'll never raise my voice and da-da-da. Doesn't mean I'll never raise my voice to her again. You know, but it means that when I do, I'm able to, like, oh, man, this is not what I want. I'm trying to amend this, and instead of going off into it, which I would do, now I can stop and say, Mom, I'm really sorry. You know, I didn't mean to raise my voice. What were you saying? And continue that way. And that, even to her, like, because my mother and father, they immigrated here, so they have no idea what this is. To this day, they ask me, do you still go to these meetings? Aren't you done? You know, I thought you finished a while ago. And I tried explaining it to them, but I have to understand that this, they don't understand what this is, and that's fine. Because they actually see what it does to me. They see how I've changed. You know, my mother, who I used to rob from blind, not saying, like, I have no idea how that $1,000 disappeared, Ma. I didn't touch it. You know, now I have her credit card because, oh, Dave, I need you to go do this or pay this bill. And I make sure it's done. And she knows it will be done. You know, that's one of the few gifts I've gotten so far in this that's pretty amazing. It's that trust back for my family. That they can rely on me to be a good brother, a good son, you know, a good uncle to my niece and nephew. In the beginning, my sister wouldn't let me near them because she knew I'd be so out of my mind that, God forbid, what do I do to a newborn? And nowadays, it's like, hey, you want to take him to football practice? Or she's going to her dance recital. You want to come? You know, like, these are pretty amazing things for me. And going through the step work, like, I remember in the beginning thinking, like, once I reach step 12, I'm done. Like, I'm completed. The fact of the matter is, according to my sponsors and what I've seen myself, step 12 is but the beginning of my work. Because step 12 means I go out of this safe area with you guys, the guys who understand me, who I can talk to freely, and go out there to the people who will look at me like I'm speaking ancient Egyptian when I say some of these things, and yet to act the same way, to carry that same vibe, that same message of compassion, of caring, of understanding, of respect, even to people that I don't agree with, people that have no idea what I'm doing, people that think I'm crazy. And that's sometimes hard, you know, especially like in the work environment. You know, I sometimes like, oh, dude, I need a minute. I got to go over here because I have to say a quick prayer. You know, or, hey, can I take my 15 now? I have to make a 10-step call. And they're like, what are you doing? You know, and I've tried to explain at times that I've learned at this point, it doesn't matter if they understand or not. It doesn't matter if anybody does. This is what I have to do to maintain my sobriety and, more importantly, my sanity. Because that's what this program has given me back, some semblance of sanity, of being able to actually think clearly and know what's really going on as opposed to what I think is going on. Because what I think is going on has been 99% of the time completely wrong, you know. But being able to actually see what's really going on and get a little bit in touch with reality, not always there, but, you know, it's a nice place to visit, that I'm able to actually go through life so much easier. And they say that this program gives you a life beyond your wildest dreams. Now, coming in, those things I mentioned before, the money, the girlfriend, the job, those were my wildest dreams. I can sit here and tell you today that those have been surpassed, and not because I have any of those things. I don't. But the experiences I've been able to have because of this program, because of my higher power, have been amazing. I've been able to take 12-step calls to people I've idolized, to people I've watched perform on TV, and sit down with them and not say, like, oh my God, you're the guy and I love you, and say, like, hey, my name is, I'm an alcoholic. And be able to talk to them freely and share with them and have them tell me, like, dude, thank you. And I'm sitting there like, dude, like, all these people came to pay to see you and you're thanking me for showing up? Like, what the hell? That just shows me, and that's not because I'm this great guy. Please don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm this awesome person. This is just the opportunity afforded to me by my higher power because of what I do here, what I try to continue to do here. You know? Like I said, my higher power, I have no problem telling anybody, are the pillars of creation. If you don't know what that is, you can Google it and see it, but that's what my higher power is, and that's mine. Yours can be that. Yours can be anything. It could be God, Allah, Muhammad, Noah, whatever. That's the last. That was the last blocking point for me in this program, was that God board. Because I had my experience with organized religion when I was younger, and I didn't like it. It didn't take. Coming in here, I was like, great, I'm going to have to get ordained and go get baptized and, you know, eat these wafers and drink some weird stuff, all that. And, you know, very quickly it was shown to me, like, no, it's the God of your understanding, the higher power as you see it. It's like, and it's intensely personal. It doesn't have to match a single other person's. It just has to be what you believe in that is greater than you. You know, like, mine's is a big formation of freaking gas and dust flowing out in deep space. And nobody can tell me that that's right or wrong, because I can't tell nobody else theirs is right or wrong. But this program has completely changed my outlook on myself, my fellow man, and the world I live in. And if you would have told me 5.5 years ago that that was possible, I would have told you, do you have any more of that stuff? Because it sounds like it's great. But today, this world, this program, this higher power, this fellowship, this service, all parts of the triangle, they're the things that keep me centered, and not just in these rooms. They keep me centered in my life. Like I said, it's very easy for me to bounce off one end or the other or try to stray from the middle, but nowadays it's easy for me to see that, and it's very easy for me to know what is happening, that know that I'm not doing something now, that I'm slacking on something, and that I'm missing out on something that I was doing. You know, like I said, if you're new, it doesn't hurt to give this program a chance. Like I said, my sponsor always told me, we'll refund your misery if you're not satisfied. You know, because all that stuff is always out there. Ain't nothing going on out there that won't be going on out there tomorrow, a week from now, a year from now. But this might be your only chance. This is my only chance to actually get a life. Thank you guys so much for letting me share.